stays up late. Stay up late. I want a girl with uninterrupted prosperity who uses a machete to cut through red tape.
Welcome to the Noontime Public Affairs. My name is Rick Castellini, and alongside me today is...
Matt Kettlewell.
Matt Kettlewell. Matt is subbing in today, and I think you're going to hear Matt more and more and more. I'm going to shut down cake there. In the next couple upcoming months, because our buddy Adam is starting to ramp up on his professorial duties over there at Mesa. So,
yeah,
congrats to him.
Yes, congrats to him. Is he not working towards his Dr. Cochran?
No, Master Cochran.
He is Master.
Cochran. I don't know if he'll go for the doctorate or not. So we'll have to ask him that.
Yeah.
But this is the Noontime Public Affairs. Today it's with Rick and Matt instead of Rick and Adam. And you can call us with any of your technology questions at 241-8801 extension 1. 241-8801 extension 1. And again, this is the Noontime Public Affairs. We are on every month on the second Wednesday of the month from 5:30 to 6:30 p.m., and this is the third Wednesday of the month, and we're on from noon to 1. And again, alongside me today, actually across from me today, to be literal if you're watching on the webcam, is 241-8801, Matt Kettlewell. And you can call us at 241-8801 extension 1. So, Matt, thanks for subbing in.
Absolutely.
We appreciate it today. And I think one news item that caught my eye yesterday I'd like to start with is the Facebook virus was giving people porn and dead animals and some other things.
Yeah, all sorts of stuff. I didn't get...
Did you see any of
it? I didn't get the worst of it, but I definitely got some Miley Cyrus and...
Oh, you got some of it?
Yeah, I got a few of them sent to me from other people.
Oh, okay.
And so I was basically telling people, don't click on this. This is obviously not appropriate. It's not coming from you think.
Your account didn't get infected.
Right.
You were getting it from folks that
that
had infections.
Yes, within my Facebook stream, I was seeing all sorts of stuff.
It
is really weird, and what was most surprising to me was that rather than people reporting it as spam and deleting it, they were commenting on it. There was one picture that there was over 1,000 comments.
Reason number 942 that I don't use Facebook. But and I think that the thing that really stood out to me was like any virus infection or any of these big public infections that happen, it wasn't necessarily... Well, and it wasn't, in this case at all, a fault of Facebook security. It was a user-generated error. Either your security settings were too low and allowed this stuff to come in, or you clicked on something within Facebook that you thought was legit, and it wasn't legit. And it's just because folks have to learn to pay a little more attention and discern what is real, what is not real.
Yeah,
is that true? Is that basically a synopsis?
I think that's true, although I didn't read the full synopsis from what Facebook was saying, but they were kind of trying to defend themselves that it wasn't their fault.
Right.
So, what you're saying there.
And, yeah. And what I read was some third-party accounts of why these people got infected and what the avenue of infection was. And it seems to be just kind of like spyware is these days, where no matter what you protect yourself with on your computer, if you choose to click on a link or click on a picture or like something, like on Facebook, sometimes these bad guys are good about creating something that looks like what you think it's supposed to look like.
Yep.
But instead, it's gonna, when you click on it, something bad's gonna happen.
That's right. Yeah.
And people say, well, should I not use it? Well, no, it's not necessarily that. It's that you have to educate yourself and be careful about how you click and where you click.
Exactly. Be aware, you know, looking at your toolbar all the time and seeing what the URL is redirecting you to.
Okay, you already lost about 50% of the audience.
Oh, no.
What is a toolbar and what is a URL? Got to define it.
Oh, sure. Well, when I said toolbar, I think I actually meant the status bar.
Okay.
And that's, you know, so when you're hovering over a link, mm-hmm. It will, you know, in the lower part of your browser, it'll tell you.
What's a browser?
Well, that'll be your Chrome, your Internet Explorer, your Firefox, your Opera, you know, things of that nature.
However you get on the Internet, however you use, yeah, that is your browser.
Exactly, exactly. So if you hover over a link, it will display where it's going to take you. And if it looks suspicious, if it's not going to Facebook.com,
right,
and you're in Facebook and it's taking you to xyz.pdq, you need to be suspicious.
And likewise, if you're on YouTube or if you're on eBay or any of these other big sites and you click a link, because people say, is YouTube bad? No, YouTube's not bad.
Right.
But anyone can put a link in the information under the video that could take you outside of YouTube, and then it could be bad.
Exactly.
And that's what Matt's talking about, is don't click these links right away. Take that half a second to hover on it and look at that status bar at the bottom of the screen and determine, is that going to... Here's the other thing. Again, it does take education, because you and I can recognize if the link says CN, we know that's going to China.
Right.
If it says RU, we know it's going to Russia. What's one of the other? Bulgaria, I think, is BU.
Right.
You know, some of those things. And if you see some of those oddball URLs, instead of .com is what I'm talking about, it'll say .cn, .ru, .bu, those kind of things.
Yep.
And you got to be weary. You got to be very weary. Is that where I intended to go? If it is, go. But if it's not where you think you were supposed to go, don't click it.
Exactly, exactly. And then verify in the URL that where you thought you were going is where you're going. The URL is being the web address up at the top where it says www.facebook.com. If you thought you were in Facebook and suddenly you're at www.imnothere.cn, you know, mm-hmm, so you're in some Chinese site or some foreign site that isn't where you thought you were, that should be sending off some warning bells to not continue that route.
That's right.
Don't enter any more information, and you know.
And then the best thing at that point is don't try to go back. Don't try to do anything. Close the browser.
Yeah.
Close out whatever internet browser you use, whether it's Internet Explorer, Firefox, what have you. Shut it down. And sometimes it's even an okay thing to do, just restart the computer.
Yeah.
Just completely start over. And I always tell people, when in doubt, and if you just don't know how to get out of where you are, reach down and push the power button.
There you go.
There's nothing wrong with doing that.
Right.
If you're totally confused and a little bit lost, because that's when you start making even more mistakes.
Yeah.
Because then things that you think might be legit, really, these bad guys know how to pigeonhole you into a corner to where almost anything you do once you're in that corner is going to put you deeper in the corner.
Right, yeah, it's a compounding error.
Mm-hmm.
The error just gets bigger and bigger, so when in doubt, reboot.
Now, the one thing I did not read on this, Matt, on this Facebook virus, was it a Windows-based kind of an infection, or was it just system-wide?
I think it was system-wide. I think it was
kind of an internal thing.
It was URL-based,
okay,
and so it was basically anything that could access the internet, you know, through them.
So it didn't matter if you were Mac or Linux.
Exactly.
It was that web-based function.
Right.
Crazy. All right, 241-8801, extension 1. We've got a call coming in. Hello, welcome to the Noontime Public Affairs. How can we help you?
Yes, hi. I have a Windows 7 machine. It happens to be a laptop. And I usually... do Skyping with my son in another state, but this time he suggested, instead of that, using I guess it's Google video chat.
Okay, which works real well. Uh-huh.
Okay, and I like Skype a lot because I've found the controls where I can screen capture pictures, and I do that through our chat session. When I was doing this with Google video chat, I did find something that appeared that I could capture the screen, and I went through maybe a dozen or so pictures, and I noticed they're PNG. Not that that matters.
You said you're Windows 7.
We're right, Windows 7.
And what method did you find to capture the screen?
It was something in the chat. There was a drop down folder, and I wish I could remember the exact details. It was like capture this picture or...
Yeah, because I'm not aware of something that's built into Google Chat, but maybe it was an extension or something that you added. But anyway, your question is?
Well, I don't know where they are.
Oh, you don't know where they got saved?
Yeah, I don't know where they saved them.
So you went to? Did you go to downloads? Were they in downloads?
No, they weren't. That's they weren't in downloads.
They weren't in pictures.
No, I didn't find them in pictures.
Well, the next time you do it, the best thing to do is if you're not sure where it's going, and Windows 7 makes this quite a bit easier. After you're finished with your chat and you've taken a few screenshots, click Start in the lower left-hand corner, the little Start button in Windows 7. And at the very bottom of the Windows 7 Start button is a little box where you can type in. And what you want to type is asterisk, which is Shift-8, and then period, PNG. And what that's going to do is look for all the PNG files on your computer. And then you might see a lot of them, but you'll be able to look through the list and look at the dates next to the PNGs and find the ones that were created in the last hour that you were chatting. And then from there, you can find out and determine what folder that it's dumping those PNGs into.
Okay. That's a good idea. Yeah. I guess that's an old-fashioned DOS command, the asterisk dot asterisk.
It is. It definitely is, but
it's a Unix thing, too.
Yeah, I guess probably older than DOS. Mm-hmm. But, it's one of the most helpful commands you can learn.
Right, exactly. Okay. Can you field one more question here?
Sure, we can do one more quick one.
Okay. This happens to be XP. Windows XP desktop, and it's been around for a while. But I have all my bookmarks saved in Gmail or in Google, not Gmail, but in Google. And I've noticed when I go to down and across to the individual particular like your program, I have that bookmarked.
Good.
For some reason, the little icon has disappeared. Now there are some icons there.
Oh, you're talking about the little web icon that for mine it's a little helpmerick.com logo, and so you're talking
exactly.
Like the eBay logo. Those are called
favicons.
Favicons, yeah. And if you've just recently transferred the bookmarks into there, or you've run some kind of cleaner program, the favicons will go away. But the next time you visit that site, then that fave icon will come back.
I've got numerous ones that have just disappeared. There's just a box there.
Nothing to worry about.
Is there any way to restore those?
You got to visit all the sites.
Other than individually.
Nope, got to visit all the sites.
Okay.
Hopefully you have a high-speed internet connection.
There's what now? Sorry?
I said hopefully you have a high-speed internet connection and a lot of time.
That's a very minor
issue, and I would not worry about it.
I agree with you. Okay, good deal, Rick. Thank you.
All right, we appreciate the call.
Okay.
Thanks. 241-8801, extension 1. 241-8801, extension 1 is the phone number. If you have a question about anything technology-related, Matt and I are here ready to answer your questions. Oh, Miss Teddy is coming in here. Let's see, Teddy, we're going to put you up there on 3. Teddy has a live question.
Yes, please.
If you're downtown and going towards Utah on Ute, you can stop by the station and come upstairs. We'll put you here in the seat, and you can ask your question live.
Okay. Yes, I have a couple of questions. As usual, I could spend your whole hour, but I'll try not to do that. Rick and
we'll
Matt.
Kick you out before then.
Yes, please do. Okay, one quick question is my iTouch, which is three, maybe four years old.
So one of the first generation ones. Maybe.
Yes, okay. It is, and I think that's the problem because I actually have never tried to use it for anything more than music storage, okay. And just of late I have been trying to see if it's something maybe my daughter could use for, with apps and things like that. Mm-hmm. But when I go searching and try and download some apps she might be interested in, every time the message is, this needs...
iOS 4 or something.
Yes. Yep. Even 3, I think.
Wow. Okay.
So well, I guess that's how old my iTouch is. So is there any way to upgrade that, or is it really kind of like...
No, you can definitely upgrade it. You just... plug it into your computer,
mm-hmm.
let iTunes recognize it, And then iTunes should show that what model it is, what iTouch it is, and it should say there is an upgrade available.
Okay.
And then you just follow the commands. It'll be a large download. It'll be a couple hour download, but let it download and then reinstall the newest version of the operating system. If it's an older iPod Touch, it may not take the newest one, which is 5.
Okay.
But it should probably go to 4.
Okay. And therein lies a second aspect of the problem, because my Mac won't even recognize the iTouch. The iTunes won't recognize it, because after I sort of blew up my hard drive, I don't know what's happening with iTunes, but I can't seem to make it.
And you've got the newest versions of iTunes
downloaded.
On, 10.5, yeah. Which is the newest one.
I think so, but yeah, that's a whole nother thing.
And there is ways to get that back up and running. And if you just go to Apple's support site, actually don't go to the support site. You could go to the support site and then go to their community forum site and search for broken iTunes or reestablish communication with iTunes or something like that. And there'll be little how-tos on these different files you can look for. They're usually in what's called the library folder.
Okay.
And then you can delete these files. And then what it'll do is basically reset iTunes. But if you search for broken iTunes or something like that.
On the Apple support page.
On the Apple support page.
Okay. Good advice.
And that should help.
Would never even have thought to do that. Okay. My other question is.
Yes. Last question.
New owner of a smartphone.
I see. You've got the one of the Droids.
I have a Droid Bionic. And my question is, when I open the apps management thingy, mm-hmm. and it says all these apps are running, mm-hmm. do I really want those apps running? Because when you tell it to shut some of them down, it says, whoa, do you really want to do this? Because you may never reestablish or, you know, whatever.
Well, it's a big depends question, because there are a lot of things, kind of like on Windows or in any computer, there are things that have to run in the background in order for the phone or computer to operate. So you have to know which ones are the ones that you can shut down. So, for example, if you see that we talked about eBay earlier, eBay is running, or Amazon's app is running, or your Facebook app is running, or things like that, sure, you know you don't need those running all the time. You can shut those down. If you don't recognize what it is, leave it alone.
Okay.
It's kind of the rule of the thumb. If you recognize it and you know that it's not something you're currently using and need running, sure, go ahead and shut it down. It'll be fine. Most of those things that you see that you don't recognize are system applications. And if you accidentally shut it down, if you just turn the phone off, turn it back on, it'll come back by itself anyway.
Okay. That's okay. Great advice. Because what's happening when they're running? Are they like eating up anything?
They're taking a little memory. And from what I understand, I'm going to call you Adam. Matt, do you have a Droid? You had an iPhone for a while.
I had one for a while. I don't have a phone at all right now. I'm in between phones.
You're in between.
I'm gearing towards the Nexus, an Android phone.
Okay, yes. Cool. What I've heard is that with the Android operating system on these phones, the more apps you have running, that's going to help decrease the battery life.
I think that's what it's doing.
Yeah. And so that's one of the biggest things. There is an app, and you may have already gotten it, called GTK Killer or something like that. Let me think. I probably have the wrong acronym. I'm going to look it up real quick. But what it does, it's a really nice, quick little app. And let's see. I'm looking. I thought it's GTK, but I think that's the wrong name. Have you heard of that one? What I'm thinking of, Matt?
I have not.
Darn it. Somebody else out there is thinking.
And it's not a data manager service.
No, that's probably something that's built in. Okay. What I'll do, Teddy, if I find that, or if someone else out there is listening, they can call us 241-8801, because it's G something. I just can't think of the name of it off the top of my head. And what it does is it gives you a real nice, easy to look at what's running on my computer. And then it has a checkbox, turn it on, turn it off.
Oh, great.
And then it says kill selected apps. And it saves battery time. Did you find it?
I found something called ATK, which is the
ATK.
Mm-hmm. Advanced Task Killer.
That's it. That's it. I don't know where I got GTK. Yeah, that's what it is.
ATK.
Yeah, right. And it's got the little Android guy.
Yep.
Good job, Mr.
Okay.
Matt.
Okay, yes. Thank you, Matt and Rick.
And it's a free one.
Okay.
And it's a much easier to deal with than digging through the settings of your Android to look for that item.
And you can just check them and turn it off that way.
Yeah. Okay. And from what I understand from Android users, that will help save your battery life a little bit.
Perfect. Okay. Thank you, as usual.
You're welcome. Thank you. Bye, Teddy. That's Teddy, Miss Program Manager here at KFM. You can call us at 241-8801, extension 1. Now, Matt, the Nexus is a very cool-looking phone, and because that's the quote-unquote Google phone, that Nexus builds it for Google,
right?
I would have to say that they're going to build it to a spec that they feel is going to optimize the Android operating system.
Yeah, I've heard some pretty good things. It's going to be the first phone that has the ice cream sandwich operating system on it.
Which is the newest version.
That is the latest. It is the version 4 of the Google operating system. So it had some pretty phenomenal features.
They're all unlocked, aren't they? So you can buy it and then you – or is it tied to a service?
Good question. I don't know for sure.
I was thinking that – at least the first Nexus came out unlocked, and then you had to pay like $600, but then you went and found the service you wanted.
Right.
You didn't have to go for that 2-year contract up front kind of thing.
Right.
But I'm not sure how they're doing the second one.
I'm not sure now.
When's the release? Have you heard the release date? No?
I was almost thinking that it just rolled out just the other day, but now you've got me questioning. Coming up, though.
I'm going to take this call, see if you can find the release date, because I'm curious on that, too. 241-8801, extension 1. Hello, welcome to the Noontime Public Affairs with Matt and Rick. How can we help you?
Hi, I've got an older laptop that I would like to upgrade the BIOS.
Okay.
And there's several versions in between the one that I have and the one that's listed on the Dell website.
Okay.
And I'm wondering if...
if you can skip all the medium versions?
Yeah,
yes.
Right.
Yes, you can.
If I go to the latest version, it'll update all the other...
That's correct.
...updates that I had the previous. Cool.
That is all you have to do.
I've read that I need to back up the BIOS. I don't know how to do that.
Well, and if in the utility where you're downloading the new BIOS, it will actually, and Dell does a pretty good job about this, when you're installing the BIOS, it actually backs it up for you, and it makes kind of a fail-safe boot. If you just follow all the commands based on the instructions, it'll do it for you.
Yeah, I didn't want it, you know, it messes up, and then I'm SOL on the whole thing.
Well, and they warn you about that because the BIOS, and for those folks out there listening, that's called the basic input-output. That's probably the main nervous system of our computer. It basically tells everything about the computer in terms of hardware. And if it goes belly up, then your computer's basically toast without the BIOS. So they do make a big deal about be careful, make sure it's backed up, all that kind of stuff. The good news is, though, the utilities that are out there to allow you to update that are very good about protecting that part of it and making sure that they're checking what the update's going to look like before it's put on. Then they test it before it reboots. So it's pretty fail-safe.
Now, the other thing is they list several ways to download that, either to the operating system or making a diskette, which I would make a CD. Would it? They don't list that option. Would it
exactly
be the same?
No, because you cannot make a diskette. I mean, you cannot make a CD. In the old days of updating BIOS, you had to do it with a floppy disk.
Right.
And then as floppy disks started exiting these computers, they did make it a Windows-based platform where they created a tool that from within Windows, you just double-click on your update, and it will kind of go behind the scenes into DOS and upgrade your
BIOS. Okay, so because I was wondering, that's not bootable, but it does it behind the scenes, you say.
That's right.
Okay. All right. Great. Well, you've sure helped me. Thank you very much.
We appreciate you calling and listening. Have a good day.
You betcha. Bye.
Bye-bye. 241-8801, extension 1 is the phone number. 241-8801, extension 1. You're listening to the Technology Public Affairs Show here on KFM Radio, 88.1 Grand Junction, Colorado. Give us a call. Matt and Rick standing by to answer your calls. Did you find the release date?
Yes and no.
Okay, really? Yes and no?
The yes is it's sometime in November.
Oh, okay.
And as of articles released here in the last couple of days, they're still kind of guessing on when the exact release date's going to be.
Wow.
So
That's odd.
Yeah.
Because you think there'd be some, and you can only buy that online, I believe. Is that correct?
I believe so at this point.
And I don't think it'll be at stores.
And I'm seeing that it's will launch for Verizon only to start with.
So it does have a carrier attached to it.
Mm-hmm.
Very interesting. All right, go back to the phones, 241-8801. Welcome to the noontime. Whoop, they hung up on us. 241-8801, extension 1. Up, try that again. Hello, welcome to the Noontime Technology Show here on KFM. How can we help you?
Yes, sometimes on a website or even just like in Microsoft Word, I'll be on the screen and maybe I'll open up a program or such, and for some reason the cursor is not really responsive. It jumps and it won't point to exactly where I'm wanting to head. It seems like maybe the command isn't getting through, or it's just bouncing around.
But now the key thing is you said it was sometimes, correct?
Right, right.
So do you know when that sometimes is? Is there a consistent sometimes? Can you recreate it?
I seem to feel like if I've opened up something large, and I'm just guessing here, maybe it's taking the resources of the computer to identify it, and it hasn't completely loaded.
I think you've answered your own question.
You think that's it?
Yep. And when these kind of, this is a very good troubleshooting step for anyone with a computer problem. The first question I always ask is, does it happen all the time? And and sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. In your case, you said it occasionally happens. So then my next question is, if it occasionally happens, when is occasionally? Is it in the morning? Is it in the afternoon? Is it after I've been on the internet? Is it when I first boot up? Is it the second time I went into the program? So the next, if it's a sometimes problem, then your next task is to try to isolate when is sometimes. Is there a consistent to the sometimes? Because if it is, then you're gonna find the root of the cause, because you're gonna say, if I do A, then B happens every time. So then you just have to figure out, is there something with A that I can do differently, or just stop doing A and then B won't happen. But if it comes up and you can't find a consistent cause or a consistent etiology of the problem, then it's up to you to. Well, then it's up to maybe a more experienced technician to come in and say, well, probably either a glitch in the program, or, you know, there's something else going on in Windows, or it could be a million different things. But the biggest thing is to try to isolate when it happens and can you recreate it.
Do you have...
So if I just give it time to maybe load completely or whatever...
That's right. Time is very important with computers. They are not, as much as we want them to be instantaneous, they are not.
Right, okay.
All
right, that's
Matt, you had a question?
Yes.
Yeah, I was just going to ask, do you run multiple tabs in your browser? I mean, I'm assuming this is happening while you're in a browser.
No, he said Word.
Oh, within Word.
Yeah. Well, it can happen in the browser as well. So, yes, the answer is yes.
Okay, I was just going to offer that on my lower-powered machines, Flash seems to be an issue that will almost bring it to its knees. So going to like YouTube and things like that, Pandora, the old Pandora anyhow. So Flash-related sites would slow it down. And if I would just simply close that tab down, then I would get my mouse back, and then I could restart whatever programs I was watching again, and it would slowly slow down again. But so just another thought to consider as you're noticing things.
Okay. Okay, good advice.
All right, well, thanks very much.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
241-8801, extension 1. We had another call coming in, and we can't put you on hold because we're inexperienced telephone operators. We're great with computers, But I have no clue how to push about a ton of buttons on the phone. So just if we're on the phone, call back, 241-8801, extension 1. And we will get you back on. So if we're on the phone, either let it ring, and we'll get to you right when we're done with the previous caller. But if not, we will pick you up when or you can call back when the other person gets off. 241-8801, extension 1 is the phone number. Now, we were talking about the Nexus, and I had a couple of other things that come up in my mind here. But back to you. I'm going to ask you a question, though, real quick, Matt. You had the iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
The iPhone 4S is getting glowing reviews.
Yes.
You don't want to go back to the iPhone?
Or
does the Android really kind of draw you?
There were a couple of things with the Android that I liked, and one of them was...
You can tell us after this call. Hello, welcome to the Noontime Tech Public Affairs. How can we help you?
I don't know if I'm on the wrong subject here, but I have a MacBook Pro.
Sure, tell us. We have no subject here. Any technology question is game.
Oh, okay, great. And what's going on with it is, you know, they're great for booting up. When you first get them, there was like 5 seconds and it's booted, you know.
Right.
But now it's taking about 25 seconds. I was wondering if you have any ideas about what can be done to... Is that because it has too much stuff on it? Or?
Well, first of all, I kind of giggled there because I love Mac users because, like you said, when you first get them, they're like instantaneous.
Yeah.
And then you said now it's 25 seconds. But that's still about 5 times faster than any Windows user, new or old. So that's why I kind of giggled there. So Windows users would kill for a 25-second startup time. But that being said, on the Mac side, there's a great little tool called Onyx, A-N-Y-X, Onyx. I think, is that a stone?
Yes.
I think it's
yes.
a stone.
Yeah,
and,
stone.
And if you search for Onyx tools for Mac, is I guess why I would search for that, it's a great little cleanup tool to help clean up startup stuff, clean out temporary files. The Mac does a lot of that on its own, but this Onyx tools will kind of help you diagnose maybe some of these startup issues. The other thing I would do is, I'm assuming you keep up with all of your updates on the Mac.
Yeah.
And how old is the MacBook Pro?
It's about 3 years now.
And do you know how much RAM it has?
It has the initial RAM. I've never put any more RAM in it, so
it probably
I'm not
has
really sure. It's 2 sticks of RAM.
So it's probably 2 gigabytes. I'm going to think on that older one.
Yeah.
But that's the other thing. This is true across any operating system, is that the more RAM that you can throw at it, the better it's going to operate. And Mac does a really good job of utilizing RAM and then allowing that computer to boot faster. So I think that would be the other thing I would check is you can go to a website like crucial.com, C-R-U-C-I-A-L, crucial.com. And you can say, scan my system, and it'll do a little scan on your computer and determine how much RAM you have and then tell you whether or not it's upgradable and then how much it would cost to do the upgrade. And it's a fairly easy upgrade to do on the Macs. And if you could double that RAM for $40 or $50, I think you're going to see that speed drop on the boot up as well.
Great.
Okay.
Well, thanks a lot. A
couple little hints there.
Yeah, thank you.
Hey, appreciate the call.
Bye.
241-8801, extension 1, 241-8801, extension 1. And Matt was telling us that one of the features he really liked about the Nexus was?
Well, it's not so much about the Nexus.
The Android.
But with the iPhone, mm-hmm. What I found difficult is the ability to manage my own files. I can't simply drag and drop files to and from the iPhone easily. You can do it with, you know, the pictures you take on there.
Right.
And that was it. And that was rather frustrating.
So you're talking documents and so forth.
Right.
Okay.
Right. Or music or you know, pretty much anything mm-hmm. that you can drag, you know, which you have become accustomed to on as a...
So you're talking like a file manager.
Exactly.
Versus an app doing it for you.
Exactly.
I see.
Yeah.
Can you do that on the Android?
I was under the impression you could.
I guess you could put things on an SD card or... or that kind of thing. I'm not 100% sure on that, but I think you're right. I think it's more flexible than the iOS.
Right, and they've got this new Android Beam, which is supposed to allow you to sync things up wirelessly, which I thought was pretty nice.
Yeah.
But the other thing with the iPhone is I'm not a Windows or a Mac user.
Okay.
And so So for me to actually want to synchronize things, I actually have to locate a machine that has iTunes on it.
Well, except starting with the iPhone 4S.
Oh.
And that was the biggest thing with the iPhone 4S and then the release of iOS 5. You don't have to own any computer anymore because they've done it all cloud-based now. So if you want to, you don't have to activate it with a computer. You don't have to ever hook it to a computer. Because now it stores and backs up your, kind of like the Android, really. Mm-hmm. It kind of backs up everything to the cloud. And then, and so if you don't want to use a computer to manage it, you don't have to.
Oh, that's very nice.
And then one neat thing that for the iPad and the iPhone and the Android as well is Dropbox is a great way to drop things in there and grab things out on your mobile.
Yeah.
So if you're using Dropbox, it works well.
Right, yeah.
So, there's one thing.
Yeah, hadn't even thought about using that.
So you may want to look at the iOS 5 again. I'll tell you what, Matt, helping people with their Androids, and I like them. I want to like them, and I want to like them a lot. But as I play around and look at things, and the more I read about it, the one thing that kind of makes me a little bit gun-shy about an Android, and we're techie people, you and I.
Right.
But is the fact that once you buy it, you're at the mercy of your provider or the manufacturer.
True.
Because one thing I read just the other day was about the fragmentation of Android and about how many devices are using 3.1, how many of them are 3.2. You know, and for the average user, they don't even know which one they have.
Right.
But if they go to get, like you mentioned, or like Teddy mentioned earlier, she wants to get an app for her Android or for her iPhone or iPod Touch. And it requires her to get a new operating system in order to do that. Same thing on the Android. And in some cases of the Android apps, you may want an app, but it's only built for the Evo, or it's only built for the Incredible.
Oh.
Or it only works with these three devices and not these two devices. So it's that fragmentation just really bothers me a little bit. And the fact that once you get into the system, they all flow pretty similarly.
Sure.
But that opening GUI on any of the phones, you see that they all look a little different because each of the manufacturers tweaks them to a little bit. So the consistency of use, and that's what I'm all about in my business, is trying to make things as consistent as possible for people because things are so inconsistent.
Yes, they
And but I think that's what draws a lot of people to the Android, too, is you can customize the heck out of it.
Right. Yeah, and that's part of what I enjoy about it. But I definitely know what you're talking about with the iPhone. It's very consistent.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's no two ways about it. It all works the same.
Right. And pretty seamlessly.
Yes, very seamlessly.
You know, you don't have to, if it's a, now again, on Teddy's case with the older operating system on her iPod Touch, That's a thing that just she hasn't been able to update it because of another computer problem.
Right.
That also goes away with the new iOS 5. In fact, they came out with an update for the iOS 5 already, and it was an over-the-air update.
Nice.
And it took literally just a few minutes versus before you'd have to download the whole ROM.
Right.
Via iTunes.
Exactly.
And then it'd have to update. It would take 30 minutes sometimes.
Yes.
But now it's an over-the-air update, and it worked very, very nicely.
Nice. Now, so you have the newer iPhone.
I have the older iPhone, but the new iOS.
Okay.
So, I think I'm going to wait till the next generation comes out because iOS 4 or the iPhone 4S, very impressive little machine. Camera's awesome. Siri really does work well.
I was going to ask.
You hear a lot about it. See, we can't get that on the older iPhone.
Right.
It's only on that 4S.
Mm-hmm.
But it works very nicely, and I love voice recognition.
Now, if I told you you could get Siri on your phone right now, what would you say? What if I told you could get it on your Android?
I know they're starting to. It's not yet, right? They're trying to get it there?
No, they do have it there.
Is it available already?
Well, yes and no. It's a hack.
Right.
It's one I found earlier this morning. Was that somebody had reverse engineered and figured out how it was programmed, and it's all through just your standard web protocol to make a call to a main server, and so somebody's broken that and basically said this can be put onto any phone, any system you want, your iPad, anything.
That's you'll have to send me the link on that one. All right, 241-8801. We got another quick call here on Technology Talk with Mr. Matt and Rick here on KFM. Hello, welcome to the program. How can we help you?
Yes, I've heard recently that there's been a discussion about cookies coming through emails. Is that something new? Is there reason to be concerned about that?
Well, what you're talking about is if it's an advertising like a newsletter or, you know, Best Buy or any of these grocery stores or anybody that you may get coupons from via email. It's not a cookie in the email per se, but if you click on a link from an email and it takes you to a website, because of the way the link is designed, and all a cookie is, just to define a cookie on the internet allows a company or a website to figure out when you arrived at their site, what kind of system you're using, and how long you spent at the site and where you went on the site. That's what a cookie does. And it's not meant to be malicious. Most cookies are not malicious. They could be malicious. But in what you're, I think, describing is what I'm imagining is that when you click on an advertising link and you go to a website, it drops a cookie on your system saying this person came from our email on August 5th. And so then it just sends information to that company about your visit is all it does.
Okay. So
you know what? You've called in a few times. I appreciate it. But we got another call on the air, so I'm going to take this next call. Thanks very much. Hello. Welcome to KFM. How can we help you? Hello. Boy, I don't know what I'm doing here. Okay, let's try this again. We got the light blinking, but now they're off. All right, 241-8801, extension 1. We're going to try this again. Hello, welcome to the Noontime Public Affairs. Can we help you? Hello? They're not there. That's okay. Maybe they're playing prank calls on us. 241-8801. I hate to cut off that young man that was calling in there, but you know, we got to try to keep the phones open for new callers as well. We appreciate you listening and calling, but we would like to try to squeeze as many different people in as we can. 241-8801, extension 1. Oh, looks like they're trying again. Hello, welcome to the Noontime Public Affairs. Can we help you?
Well, I think
there we got you.
We hooked up.
Yes. How can we help you?
Well, I've got this is kind of a long story, but anyway,
give us the cliff notes of the story.
Okay, you want the condensed version?
The very condensed version.
Okay, my email is going through. What the hell was it?
Remember, the FCC is listening.
Well, it's going through.
What's the last part of your email address? That'll tell us what it's going through. Don't give out your whole email address, but you are at what?
Gonzo.com.
At Gonzo.com. So do you own Gonzo.com, or is that a domain you own?
Well, no, it's not a domain, but I do own Gonzo.com.
Okay, so you own, so that is a domain. That's a domain email. And so tell us, who are you hosting Gonzo.com through to get your email? Are you doing GoDaddy, or what are you doing?
Well, no, I'm going through Microsoft Outlook.
Okay, so you're using Outlook. All right, so you have your own domain, you have Microsoft Outlook, and so your question is?
Well, I want to get out of Outlook, and I've also got Gmail.
Okay, good, good.
Outlook and Gmail right now are running together.
So you're bringing your Gmail into Outlook.
Right.
Okay, gotcha. All right. And you would like to do what?
Want to get rid of Outlook.
Uh-huh.
And just do Gmail.
Okay. And that's my recommendation. I think that's a great way to go. And that's a very easy thing to do, because you could just simply shut down Outlook today and stop using it and just go to gmail.com. And from your host provider, whoever your host is for Gonzo.com, if you know how to get into the control panel of the Gonzo.com, you can you can go in there and say, forward my email from this web address or from this domain to Gmail. Or you could, in Gmail itself, say, go out to my domain and grab my email. I think the former is the quicker and cleaner way to do it, but you can do either way.
Well, actually, if I go into Gmail, all the stuff that's in Outlook is there.
Including your domain email?
Yes.
Well, then for some reason, you've already got that set up. So then your question to me is what then, if you've already got that set up?
Okay, then how do I get rid of Outlook?
You just never open it again. Just don't open it. And if you don't want to even look at it, just delete the icon from your desktop. The program will still be there, so you can go look at it on occasion if you want to. But you certainly do not have to use it. If you've got, it sounds like you have the Gmail all set up the way I would recommend it, and I think it works very, very well by routing all your email through it. It does a good job of managing the email, and then you have access to it from any device, from any computer.
Okay, then how do I get my... I've got a logo and my signature and all that good stuff. How do I get that into
Gmail? Go to my website, go to helpmerick.com, and just search for Gmail signature. And I've got a video tip, showing you exactly how to put your logo into your Gmail signature. So go to helpmerick.com and search for Gmail signature.
Taking notes. Search Gmail.
Gmail signature. All right?
All right, my friend. Thank you.
Hey, we appreciate it. Have a good day.
You too.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
241-8801, extension 1. 241-8801, extension 1. We have a few more moments left. One other thing that came out this week... speaking of Android, Mr. Matt, is the new Amazon Kindle Fire.
Yes.
Have you been out to see one yet?
I have not seen one.
I haven't seen one yet either.
I've heard mixed reviews on them.
I've seen the same thing. I was just reading last night that a lot of people say it's actually pretty well integrated, does a good job. It's not the fastest thing in the West. Mm-hmm. Doesn't have the external memory, no camera for doing things like Skype and those kind of things.
Right.
But...
For $200. They're expecting it to be a pretty hot item.
And I can't imagine that they won't continue to upgrade it and add some nice little features to the operating system.
Right.
But that's cool. And then, not to be outdone, Barnes & Noble is releasing their full-blown tablet version later this month. We know that the Nook Color has been hacked for months to be able to run full-blown Android, but now they're coming out with their own tablet version.
Nice.
That's very cool. All right, another quick call here, and I might make this one... the last one for the hour. Hello, welcome to the Noontime Public Affairs. How can we help you?
I have an iPad 2 I'd like to print with, and
okay.
I need to get it to see my network printer.
Okay.
Does helpmerick.com have help for that? Or?
Well, it depends on what your printer is. What printer do you have on your network?
It's just a Canon photo, 3-in-1 type printer.
Okay, then you're going to have a tough time. Because there's only a few printers out there, and most of the printers are HP printers that will automatically integrate with your iPads or your iPhones. If your printer is a networked printer, there are a few different utilities you can find in the App Store that will help you attempt to print in kind of a roundabout way to these non-air prints. See, what they call it is the technology they're using with the HP, and I believe there might be like one brother laser printer that does this, but the technology is called air print, and that's what allows these things to run without any software, and it just automatically, if you're on the Wi-Fi in your house, it automatically sees it. But if it's a non-air print printer, which yours is, because Canon does not have one yet, then you have to use different utilities. I'm looking online right now. There is one called the AirPrint Activator. Is an app that's out there.
Okay.
Matt, did you find anything? Did you do any search on that real quick?
Yeah, I was doing a search, and all I found were the AirPrint-enabled printers.
Yeah. So it's a little tougher, but what I would do is go to the App Store and just search for printing, and maybe even put Canon printing.
Okay.
So that way there might even be an app that has been specifically built for the Canon printers.
Sounds good. Thank you very much.
Hey, we appreciate the call. Good luck with the iPad.
Okay,
bye-bye. Bye-bye. All right. Well, I think we only have a couple of minutes left, and actually I'm looking. Yeah, we have five different clocks in here, and we have four different times. But I guess we have a few minutes. We could probably squeeze in one more call at 241-8801, extension 1, if you want to give us a call. But anyway, back to the little tablets from the bookstores, from Amazon and from Barnes & Noble. I think it's a great little option for someone who wants to have an e-reader, number one.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't want to spend a lot of money to get, because a tablet really is a niche device.
Very much so.
Don't you think so?
I do, yeah.
And it's for some people, it's going to work great. For other people, they're going to say, gosh, why did I buy this?
Yeah.
But if you're looking to get a reader and you want to have a digital reader, I would say the best way to go is look at one of the color readers from Amazon or from Barnes & Noble.
Mm-hmm.
Because then you can get that little bit of a tablet functionality without spending a boatload of money.
Exactly, exactly.
And it may be a gateway for you, a gateway drug to getting a full-blown tablet. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it would be perfect for high school students or for college students even.
Mm-hmm.
Especially for high school students, because then it doesn't have so many features that, you know, they're out there just taking pictures of everything during class.
That's a good idea.
Can actually trust them to be in class and reading a real book.
Right.
Or, you know, fingers crossed.
Yeah, but, hopefully. You know. And not going to sites like we found earlier.
Exactly.
That's right.
Exactly.
But you could if you wanted to.
Yeah.
241-8801. I do see a new, just 36-minute old, just happened while we were here on the air. And you, I don't know if you saw this or not because you don't have your iPhone anymore, but Google released an actual native Gmail app for the iPad and the iPhone, but they had to pull it within a few hours about 2 weeks ago because it was so buggy. There were so many problems, but they re-released it today.
Oh, very nice.
So I didn't even get a chance to download it the first time. So I'm going to be curious to see what it looks like. I think that the iOS Mail app works pretty darn well for Gmail, but I like Gmail so much that I want to see what they've done with it and see if there's any extra functionality. So, but that was a new news item that just got released while you and I were talking here.
Nice.
And I'm trying to see if there was anything else here that just poked me in the eye. Anything else poke you in the eye on the way over here or during this week that you wanted to talk about that we didn't talk about?
No, I don't think so.
Well, then I'll tell you what. I think what we should do, Matt, is thank all the listeners. Appreciate them listening and calling in. And Matt, thank you for sitting in for Adam.
Oh, it's wonderful to be here. Yes.
I think it'll be fun to maybe do this on a more regular basis.
Absolutely.
Cool. All right. Well, I think we'll go out here with a little bit of music. And stay tuned for more great music here on KFM.
All right. Thanks, everybody.
Come on, y'all. We're going to Zydeco in the town. Come on.